Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
And a happy new year to everybody. Welcome to another edition, the 2022 inaugural version of Spits and Suds. Here on 105.3 The Fan, I'm Gavin Spittle, joined as always by two-time Stanley Cup champion Craig Ludwig. Happy New Year, sir. Right out of the gate, tell us your New Year's resolution. This year, Craig Ludwig will
not have a resolution like all the other years.
Oh, really? Have you been a big resolution guy in the past or no?
No, it's a total waste of time. Nobody ever lives up to their resolutions. You need to say, I'm not going to have another beer. I'm not going to stay out past curfew. I'm going to be such a nice guy to the female. It's just all, it ain't going to happen. So I don't bother with it.
All right.
Yeah. You get what you get.
You want mine?
To get bigger.
I'm lean.
Yeah, that's a way of saying it.
Yeah, exactly. I'm lean, man. This is how I am.
I don't think people walk around and see you walking through a mall and say, God, that guy's lean.
Why
might
not?
Describe you in a different way.
Yeah, I don't think so, man.
All right.
I don't think so.
Hey, it's all about perception, right? It's more important how you feel about yourself.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. It's a tennis body.
Yeah.
Right? Where are you?
So what did you commit to this year? So you
okay.
can get it out of the way, for God's
okay.
sakes.
Okay, here's what I committed to.
More dating online or no?
Yeah, I'm going to take my talents overseas. Try to show up on 90 Day Fiancé. I feel like that'll be my big break.
That's a real thing?
Yeah, you don't know about 90 Day Fiancé?
No, I don't know about anything. It's just right. You know, I really don't care to even know, to be totally honest with you.
No, it's a good show. It's a reality show where Americans basically figure out whether or not if they want to get engaged or married to someone in a different country. Yeah.
You have an addiction to this stuff, I believe.
I don't have an addiction. I just watch it. You know, it's on in the background. I mean, Food Network.
Oh, I don't know. I think you live it too. I thought it was actually a dating site, 90 Day Fiancé.
Oh, no.
I was hoping if you're getting on that, I hope they at least give you your money back.
You know what I was thinking, though, as far as dating apps? I am 50 now, so I can go to the older dating app.
Maybe that'll be more successful for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, it's got to be, right?
Well, if it is, then you should have started lying about your age a long time ago.
Oh, that's true. I should have. I actually went out with a woman, and she said she was, the age difference was 10 years. And I was like, I don't care. It's just don't lie about it.
Well, now that everybody, all six people that were tuned in are gone, let's start our show.
All right, fine. We'll talk hockey. My New Year's resolution, by the way, is we have to hang out minimum of two times in 2022. I'm going to make it happen.
Yeah, okay.
All right. So, Stars win last night. The Kraken came to town. I find the Kraken interesting, Craig, because there are so many names on the Kraken. They just haven't been able to, you know, completely gel. But the problem is that the standard now is not the old Florida Panthers that Seve used to play on. The standard now is Vegas, so people are expecting expansion teams to fight for the playoffs or even go to the cup like Vegas did. But some really cool names. It was good to see Mark Giordano in the building, obviously Jamie Oleksiak, Jordan Eberle. So there were some nice names, but nice start by the Stars. But I have to be honest, and I'm not trying to be pessimistic, but when you look at this game last night and then I look at the St. Louis collapse toward the end, if you want to blame the referee, I get it was a missed call, but I didn't think they played well in that third period either. I feel like they're kind of losing that aggressive play in the latter stages of the game.
I don't disagree with anything you've said. It's interesting you brought up Gio's name, Giordano. He might not even be there next year. That's how crazy that is. I mean, there is already talk that come trade deadline time, as a matter of fact, his agent even said that somebody asked him a question. He goes, yeah, he'd absolutely be open to going back to Calgary. Like, I don't even know how you say that out loud after you're, you know, I'm sure he does, because just look at the standings, Look at the difference in teams and, you know, but again, I'm sure they would love to go back. I'm sure he would love to go back, step out of, you know, the situation that he's in right now. And I'm sure Seattle's a great place to play, but they've got 10 wins out of what, 35 games or whatever they played.
Yeah.
So, you're right. It's not like what it was in Vegas. And there was a reason for that, because they weren't going to let it happen again.
Right.
They weren't, you know, and in all reality, you would almost kind of expect it to have some of the opportunities that Vegas created in their offseason about putting a team together, because you paid over $200 million more than Vegas paid.
Mm-hmm.
So Vegas paid around $400 million. These guys paid around $600 million, but we don't get the perks of what Vegas got away with. So anyway, that's all history. So, you know, when it goes to the games in Dallas and stuff, I agree with you, because it's like it's in spurts. It's like you have this wave of, you know, great play, and then you don't. And it's like it's almost like one extreme to another. And it's like when the other team turns up the gas, they can't equal it. And so there's these pockets of sustained play in your own zone, and that you can't get out of the zone. And, you know, I look at the last time that they played Florida. I mean, they're playing them again tomorrow night. You know, it was a game that I didn't think Florida played. The one thing about playing against a team like Florida in Dallas's point, I think it's a perfect team for Dallas to play against, at least at home, because they exchange chances. And it ultimately comes down to what goaltender is going to make the most saves and who's going to make the most spectacular save at the right time. And, you know, the last time they played Florida, Bob let in a couple, the goaltender for Florida let in a couple goals, and he's been really good. I mean, you know, he's been getting beat up ever since he went to Florida, what, 3 years ago or whatever it was?
Sure, because of that salary cap number.
Well, yeah, I mean, $10 million and the guy couldn't stop a beach ball for the first two years. So now he's kind of gotten back to form. But when you have a goalie like that now is on top of his game, or you at least feel he is, you can play that kind of style. You can run and gun, because, you know, what they do is they give you outnumber chances. And I think Dallas is similar. I mean, I know they try to play better, and their numbers will tell you they're a better defensive team. And I think that's what they hang their hat on. But in, you know, for my two cents, there, you know, there's too many times that it opens up when I think it's needless, but it's part of their identity. So, but I mean, Florida, you look at the two teams that they're playing, you know, in the next 48, 72 hours.
Yeah.
You know, when this is the Florida, the Florida, Tampa, typically Carolina, I think is kind of on a lot of teams' trips now, you know, because they're all kind of going the same general direction. You're going to make a road trip out there. For some reason, those three teams on, but they're the new West Coast trip from about 10, 15 years ago when it was, you know, LA, Anaheim, and San Jose. I mean, that was, what do they call it? Murder's Row or something like that.
Well, that's a great comparison, because even I was thinking this weekend, you got to get at least one or two points, you know? I'm not saying, you know, it's not like we have 15 games left, but you got to start getting some points on the road. And boy, you are so right that, you know, Florida, Tampa, and add Carolina. That's rough when if you have to play all three.
And you know, you typically, I mean, for a long time it's been said, you know, you play 650, 625 winning percentage at home, and you can play 500 on the road, you're gonna have a good season. And you know, you come out of, if you have to play, if they're the three teams on your schedule, you thank your lucky stars you came out of that with 3 out of 6 points. And you know, Florida's good. Let's just put it that way. I mean, they play to their strengths, and you know, I mean, they score goals, and their home record is incredible. I think they're number two at home, you know, from the standpoint of when you got to play those guys on their turf. And so they've got, they stay with who they are. I mean, the one thing they don't do is they don't change when they're on the road and they're at home. I mean, Dallas, for whatever reason, I think Dallas has got them. This could be the perfect weekend. Are we playing on the weekend? I don't even know what the hell today is.
Yeah, Friday and Saturday.
I guess you could call it the weekend. This is the perfect weekend, if you look at it the right way, to get that, you know, when a Sagan, a Ben, Hintz, Radulov, whatever it may be. Well, let's not use Radulov. It's not going too well for Rabs. But when that guy can't get that goal that they're typically ready to score, and they, you know, they pull the old monkey off their back. You know, they haven't scored for 8, 9, 10 games. For Rabs, I think it's been 30. But, you know, this could be that weekend. This could be that weekend. You know, it's going to be tough because Tampa now has their game rolling. They've got Kucherov back, and so now everything has fallen into place, and it seems like that guy can just somehow take 4 months off every year and be the best player on the planet when he comes back. But
right.
But you know, you come out of that weekend and you come out and you get, you know, you're looking at 4 points. Let's say you get 2 points. Let's say you get 3 points. That's a really, really good weekend against these teams. And maybe that's what – you know, because I think that game that happened, that unrolled there in St. Louis, it just piles on how we're just snake bit on the road. And, you know, it comes down to the last couple of minutes of a hockey game. You got a lead, and, you know, you can go ahead and you can talk about the call, the penalties, but, you know, you kind of shot yourself in the foot a couple of times too. You had opportunities on the power play to push that to a 2-goal lead, and, you know, maybe even a 3-goal lead. So, you can't just pin it on a collapse, and because it's, you know, it's a 6-on-4, it's a 5-on-3, you know, there's, you did put yourself in those situations. I totally agree that there was a missed call, and there's no question about it, but it happens. I mean, I've seen it happen more times this year in games than I have ever in the past. And I just think it's a fast game. It's a super fast game now. I think one referee was in a poor position.
Yeah.
The one that everybody thinks should have had the call.
I don't think he saw it. He couldn't.
Well, you got 3-4 bodies behind the net.
Yeah.
He's standing behind the net. Now, how many times and I'm one of the guys that complains about it. And if you talk to referees, they will tell you that the guy that is out on the blue line area actually has a better view of what's going on inside that zone. And when they get down to the other end, the guy that was in the zone is typically the guy that's on the outside, because the players are bigger, the things are happening faster, so they have the better view. And so the question is for me is, why didn't the guy outside the zone, the referee outside the zone, be able to make that call? Because once the traffic was by and past the net, I don't know it. But then again, I had heard yesterday that what one of the officials saw is there was a toe pick. And that Heiskanen toe picked, and he wasn't pulled down. I don't know. kind of like players, I think referee, you know, they stick up for each other, and hey, that's really what happened. It's tough to see. So anyway, but you know, you get it together for two games, and because I, like I said, that St. Louis game, it just puts more doubt in the back of your mind. It's like, we just can't win. All these things are happening to us on the road, and so this could be the way to turn it. And say, because if they're going to make the playoffs, they've got to find a way to start winning the road. I mean, they're great at home. They're lights out at home. You know, they do things at home. Their numbers are great at home. All these right things happen for them. But you know, like I said, it used to be where you're 500 on the road. They're not, they're 300 on the road.
Yeah.
That ain't going to cut it. But they've got a couple road trips that are road trips. I mean, they've got three back-to-backs this month on the road. But the next one between, I think it's Buffalo and Detroit, those are two winnable games. I don't care if they're back-to-back or not. And I know Detroit's a better team. Buffalo, you know, they're off the rails.
Right.
And then they go into Philly and Jersey. Jersey's got a bunch of players out, and there's some injuries. And Philly is, you know, they're a tire fire. So, you know, they've got some back-to-backs here and on the road, which is never easy, but they've got some games that they can win. And even they've got, well, starting that Buffalo trip, they got Montreal home. So, I mean, you look at that, you come back from this road and you get a couple points out of this road trip, you know, ideally three, well, perfect scenario is you get them both, but that's a tough ask. There's no question about it. But you're going to beat Montreal. I will go out on a limb now because you talk about a tire fire. I mean, if it can go wrong, it's gone wrong for the Montreal Canadiens. They just got done playing one game in, I think, 12 days, you know, because of COVID. Their games are canceled because they don't want to play in their Canadian cities. They're losing revenue and all this other stuff. So, you're still going to have to play your game, but you really should be winning that game. You go on the road against Buffalo and you know, you got four games on the road. And you got four games really in 5 days on that road trip. And, you know, they're back to back. You go back to back and then you have a day off, then you go back to back. But they're teams that they can win. And so I can see those guys. You look at that block after this weekend of those five games before they got to come back home and play Washington. That's 10 possible points. They can have seven of those. Yeah. I really think they can. And anything above seven is great. But anyway, yeah, the... You know, last night's game, it's a win. The bottom line is you come out of those games and where you're at and how you're trying to climb up in the standings, and they are climbing up in the standings. I mean, they're, you know, they've got those games in hand, and you talk about it all the time is, you know, yeah, but they got, you know, three games to five games to some teams. But the whole key to that is to be able to win them. And so they're knocking on the door of a wild card spot. And, you know, they're chasing a couple teams that, you know, Calgary, if Calgary gets it together again, you would think Minnesota sitting in a wild card spot. You would think that Minnesota, that I think they're going to get Kirill back. So the thrill is going to be back from his injury. So I think they're going to get a little bit of a spark there. Minnesota is better than a wild card team, in my opinion. But the team that, to me, that just keep, as far as a playoff race, the team that keeps going, what the hell's going on here, is Nashville. I didn't see it coming, but you know, they're sitting at the top in that division, and I just don't get it. They're sitting at the top in the West, I think, as a matter of fact. But they're playing at like 675 winning percentage, you know. And again, that just, it leads you right back to Saros. That just tells you how important goaltending is.
You know, I loved watching him over the year. He was a Stars killer, but I loved watching him, and I said, this guy's a starting goaltender in this league. And I'm at the point, Craig, I don't know if you feel the same way, but I thought Jake Oettinger, especially in the third period, made some key, you know, momentum-killing stops. I love his calmness in the net. I know Holtby obviously is in protocol, so as of right now, Oettinger is your starting goalie. But I'm interested to see if he kind of takes the reins at this point and puts together a nice game this weekend, and then puts together some good games. Whereas if Holtby comes back, it's more Oettinger than Holtby.
Well, we're right back to four goalies again.
Yeah.
We got Dobie on the bench. We got Bishop doing the TV. And you got Holtby and Otter. We're right back to the four guys back in town again. So it would be interesting, though, wouldn't it, if something happens and there's a little rattle in Florida, and it's one of those games where, you know, do you put the kid, what do? You put the kid back in, or you go back to Dobie? Do you know what I'm saying? For the Tampa game.
Ooh.
And then all of a sudden Dobie stands on his head.
I mean, at this point in his career, he's used to back-to-backs being in the AHL.
Well, yeah, but he didn't have a very good go at it in the AHL.
You know, defensively, a little tougher down there too. But I mean, if you look at, you know, 9-2, 2.20 goals against, 923 save percentage. I know there are other analytics, but at the same time, I mean, you know, he's clearly proven that he deserves to be at this level. But most importantly, I mean, I love his calmness in front of the net. I would think as a defenseman, Craig, you know, you would love a guy like that behind you.
Absolutely. You know, and again, there are goalies out there, and I've been blessed that I haven't played with them. And it's some of the pet peeves. And I knew when I was doing the games, and there was a couple goalies that are here, I just hate it when, you know, when you make a mistake as a defenseman, you know that you should have been better at the way you played a certain situation. But when a goalie stares you down after it goes in the net, and it's not a team guy to me. And I think where that comes from, and I can go all the way back to Patrick Roy's rookie season. I've told this a lot of times, and I don't know why it sticks out, but maybe it was just because of a young kid that takes responsibility as a goaltender. There was a 2-on-1 that I played, and I just played it terrible. And the puck ultimately got across to the other side of the net, and it was, you know, it was an empty netter, basically. And I said to Casso, to Patrick, we call him Casso. Casso, he's got a shape like a French fry box, and that means French fry box in French, Casso. So, and I just said to Casso, I said, dude, I'm sorry. I just, to put it bluntly, I said, I just fucked that up. And he goes, no, I got to get across to make that save. That's not on you. I said, no, that's on me, Patrick. And he goes, no, I have to make that save. And he was adamant about it. And for some reason, it just sticks in my mind. And maybe that was the standard that I got for any goalie going out moving forward in the NHL. But it is an issue for me when I watch games and I see, yes, the defenseman or the forward should have had that play. But to stare at the player that made the mistake as he skates in front of your net, then behind your net, and then up to the blue line and into the bench and stare at him, to me, that's not a teammate. And that's one thing that I don't see here. I mean, you're talking about Holtby. There's some saves that I, you know, when I said Holtby, I thought it's been very good. I mean, but there are things going on around him that shouldn't be happening. And he's making some big saves at some key moments. But there are some that, you know, I think he could have stopped. But he is not that guy that I'm talking about. Ottinger's not that guy. Dobie's not that guy. You know, regardless of who has to play here, they're not that guy. They're team guys. They take responsibility for their own actions from what I can see. And we know Hugh Dobin about everything that's been said about him as a teammate. And I believe that's been, you know, I think Ottinger right now is still that quiet young kid. You know, I don't think he's as outgoing, or I should say boisterous, as Dobie is. And I don't know Holtby what he's like in the room, but from what you see, what you hear, they've got three goaltenders that are in it, and they're in it for the right reasons, and they're great teammates, which is probably the most important thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought it was also great at the end of the game, if Stars fans were still watching, when Pavelski absolutely got robbed of a hat trick, and, you know, paid homage to Grubauer.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just think that's like such great sportsmanship. You know, and I think it's because it's Joe Pavelski. I don't think the Kraken minded that, you know, he's going to go by and talk to the goaltender just because it's Joe Pavelski. And I think he's universally liked. And I mean, I'm just watching him on the ice last night, and I'm just thinking, like, this is modern day Chris Chelios with the age and everything like that. I mean, at this point, unless he completely slows down, Jim Neal has to make efforts to re-sign him, especially with that line. You know, I mean, that line right now of Hintz, Robertson, and Pavelski is really, I mean, we talked last week, that second line was really good. Gurionov, tough to go into protocol, but that first line is really fueling this offense.
Yeah, I mean, night after night. And there's nothing more that you can say. I mean, they are there. Not only do they score early, they score often and at home. You know, and again, they are consistent. And Joe is the guy that's got the smile on his face. And going back to that, you know, that fist bump, he goes down and gives it to Grubauer last night. That probably wouldn't happen if they had the two and the other team had the four. So, you know, that action probably doesn't happen if you're losing. So it's easier to go down there and give them credit for a great save while the game is going on TV, you know, and they all see you skating to the other end. That's easy. But that's just class. I mean, that's what Pavelski is. He's the father figure, obviously, of that line. And there's two kids and all the things that those two players and Hansen and Robertson that are the most important part of what's going on with that line is probably what those two are learning from him with his experience, the way he handles winning and losing after games, before games, the way he prepares, the way he's that guy every day in practice that takes 50 to 100 shots, tip-ins. That's why he's the best in the league at it. All those little habits that he has, that's probably more important than what's going on. I think if you look at it from a general manager standpoint and you're looking at what's going on, whether this team makes the playoffs, whether they get through the first round or the third round or whatever happens, whether they sign Joe for another year, they're going to go, this was so worth the $7 million a year. And maybe they weren't there the full term of Joe being there. Maybe he gets another year. But it was so worth it because these two guys that he's playing with right now are going to move down the road. And when Pavelski is done, they are going to carry the things along for themselves and for the people that they ultimately are in that same situation at some point in their career. And this is where I go back to the saying that hangs in Montreal's locker room. And it's in French and now it's in English. And I've said this before, but we pass this torch to failing hands, yours to be held high. Don't ever let that flame go out. And so Robinson had explained that whole thing to me. Cause at the time I had no clue what it all meant. But it was like, listen, you get to a certain point in your career, it's your responsibility to start passing things along to the younger players. And that's what I mean with Joe, that's what's happening with those two guys. And if they're going to be your future, which there's no question those two guys are, and they're probably our present right now, probably sooner than, especially for Robo, sooner than you may have expected. Maybe everybody saw it coming. But my God, I mean, when they get to be 6-7 years in this league and there's, you know, a couple of other younger guys that are coming, you talk about guys that are, you know, have been groomed well. That's well worth what did Joe get? 3x7, $21 million,
yeah, or whatever. $7 million a year.
3 years. And it's going to be well worth the price of having Joe Pavelski.
I'm going to be fascinated to see what the market is at the end of this year for a Joe Pavelski.
If I were sitting in that chair, I have to look at where we are. I have to look at, because again, I'm sure you're going to bring it up. You know, you got the Klinger situation.
Yeah.
And so you got Klingberg, you got Radulov, Jamie and Tyler, where are they going to be next year? I think Jamie's doing what Jamie does. Tyler, where's Tyler going to be? Is he going to bounce back from the year after the rehab, or are we seeing what we're going to see? You're going to have to have a good hard look, and that look may come in 2 months from now. You know, you may see changes in a couple months from now, because, you know, if you're talking about John Klingberg, and we're 10, 12 points out, and, you know, everybody knows what's going on with Klinger. And I think he is going to handle this as classy as he's been since day one here. And you're not going to see a drop in how he plays, especially because he, you know, why would he have a drop? Why would he show any of that reaction, even if it feels that way? Mm-hmm. Because if he's not going to be here, there's a payday down the road. The whole tap dancing here, Klinger's going to be 30 when he starts next year. If John wants 8 years, John, if you were a GM, would you give you 8 years?
Yeah.
And have, you know, be on the books for $8-9 million when you're 38 years old.
Yeah. It's not the average per year. It's the age and the term.
That's the thing. Well, that's exactly. But let's face it. When Miro got what Miro got, you don't think that Klinger was the first guy that was reading every word of that press release?
Absolutely.
Or whatever.
And
he was sitting going, hey, yeah, he's going to be good, but I am good. That's I'm sure that's what Klinger's thought process is.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I was having a conversation with someone the other day. A couple of things. I mean, I know that Haskinen is a great player. I'm making that disclaimer to say what I'm going to say. I feel as though offensively he has regressed since the bubble.
I agree. And I don't disagree whatsoever.
And that's what scares me about a Klingberg leaving, is that everyone just assumes that Haskin can take that power play quarterback position, and maybe he can, or maybe you go out and get a puck moving defenseman who's good on the power play for $4 or $5 million a year. But at the same time, I think because Haskinen is the golden child, I think that people don't look at Klingberg like they should, as far as, you know, being a good player. And, you know, if we really, really want to be frank, and it's early, and hopefully 3 years from now we're not saying this, but they got the wrong defenseman in the draft. Cale Makar is better right now. So, I mean, it's too early to make that. That's like a comparison in football. Should you have drafted Tyron Smith or the next pick, J.J. Watt? Well, you know, I mean, they're both great players. So I'm not saying in any way that Miro is, you know, he's a very, very good player. But we cannot put him at elite yet. And that's what scares me about this whole Klingberg thing. And they had a chance to put Klingberg in the expansion draft and keep that salary. I'm not saying that was the right move, but that opportunity was there, and they chose to keep him based on what I felt as though they were going to sign him to a long-term contract. And you are absolutely right, Craig. If they are 10 to 12 points, they have to look at getting something in return.
Yeah, a couple things. I'd say you could be cited for plagiarism, because he just used Bobby Clark's opinion on Cale Makar with Hexy, because I guarantee you heard that conversation.
No, I didn't. Don't tell me. Tell me. I didn't.
Oh, my God. Bobby Clark came out day before yesterday and just sewered Hextall, who's now the GR. You know, he's
oh, about the Patrick.
Oh, no. It was all about the draft, and said they should have taken, and Hexy didn't listen to the scouts, and everybody wanted Makar except him. He went behind their back, decided to go on his own, and, you know, take the other kid, even though the kid was rated number, you know, he was number one in one ranking, number two in the other one. But, and again, hindsight, guys, you know, okay, yeah, Cale Makar is lighting it up, and he's going to be around for a long time. And he is a living, breathing highlight show. Every time Colorado's on, my channel is on. Yep. I got something that's tuned in to Colorado. There's no question about it. But anyway, here's, and you talk about the offensive things, and I will say this, and I said this to you guys, or to you early in the year, is like last year I felt that Haskinen needed to take another step, like take charge more, because he is a dynamic player. But the one thing I've said about Haskinen is that, and this is no knock, when Miro gets the puck below the faceoff circles in the offensive zone, Cale Makar things don't happen. Okay. Like it isn't as electric, and there's not going to be a highlight reel thing of what Miro does below from an offensive standpoint. So from what he does is he transports the puck from his own end up to the offensive blue line. Just incredible. He makes the right play all the time. The pass, he can skate by people. And when I said he needs to do more, I meant, you know what? You don't need to make that 10-foot pass, which is the correct pass for 90% of the defensemen coming out of their zone. You can beat that guy getting out of your zone with your moves, with your speed. And that creates more, it creates more dysfunction from the setup, the defensive setup the other opposing team has, is when you skate by or you make a move, and now you just lost two guys. And now it really turns into a 4-on-2, 4-on-3 moving up the ice with your legs. Your legs can do that. But, and this is, and again, no knock, but when he gets below the tops of the circles in the offensive zone, there are no Cale Makar things going on. And Cale Makar is just a special player. So it's not even, he's a different player. But so that's, and that, again, he is a, Miro's a great player. It's going to be a great player for a long time. And he should be, you know, in that talk for that trophy. And, you know, he should be in that every year for the next 5, 6, 7, 8 years. No question. Makar is probably going to win it every year as the best defenseman. But anyway, so with all of that being said, him and Klingberg are different players. Mm-hmm. Klinger is more of a puck possession, pull people out of the way, lose a player with his skill. I think they're both needed players, to be totally honest with you. And there's a lot of people that didn't like Klinger in the beginning because he wasn't this in his own zone. He wasn't, because he's not that player. He's not a guy that's going to be a shutdown defenseman all the time. And so, but The thing that worries me about Haskinen over the last 2 weeks, I've seen him get beat wide a couple of times defensively. He got beat wide last night. His feet got kind of crossed up. And you don't, I mean, I can't remember ever seeing him get beat wide in his own zone when he's playing defense. Like, he has got lateral movement. And again, yeah, these just might be a couple isolated incidents, right?
But I saw it last year too. The one player I did see that beat him wide early in his career was Tarasenko. And I mean, that's because of pure speed, but you know, he allowed Tarasenko, and I thought he could have been more physical as far as, I mean, you're the expert, you know? I mean,
it's, well, when Edmonton was in town, he had one where he kind of was moving forward just outside his blue line, and it was Connor McDavid coming down the wall. The puck turned over, got the puck to Connor McDavid, and McDavid steps over the offensive blue line, and Murillo took three or four backward strides and had an unbelievable gap on him. And I was like, oh my God, like, yeah, you, that's just not even possible to do, but he does that. Then all of a sudden over the last few weeks, I'm seeing him kind of, and again, this may just be that patch, right? He's not playing bad. There's a couple things that are happening. Again, he's a young kid. And the other thing, do you think that, what is Miro, 23, somewhere in that neighborhood, 22, 23 yep. years old, something like that? But he just got $60 million contract coming up?
Yeah.
Like, probably a little pressure on him. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
you know, there may be some pressure going, hey, you know, I was making this and now I'm going to be making this, and I'm going to have to live up to this. Well, the way you live up to it is to just do what you've been doing since you came into this league, you know, and yes, you're going to continue to grow. And like I talk about those tops of the circles things, all of a sudden we may see, you know, what, maybe it's in a month from now, all of a sudden, bang, now he's making that play at the offensive net, that play at the net. But again, don't expect him to be Cale Makar. That's not who he is. He doesn't have that. He's got good hand, but his strength, to me, is his hockey IQ and his legs. His legs can skate him out of trouble, skate him out of the zone, control gaps defensively. I wish he was a little bit more difficult to play against in front of our own net at times. You know, sometimes he gets on the outside looking in, but now I'm getting nitpicky, you know, and my guys will tell you that.
I mean, I think we both agree. He's a very, very good player. I'm just looking for that next step.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, like I said, you know, I don't know what the number of games that he's played. Has he played 100 games yet? Has he played 150 games? I don't know what the number is, but you know, whoever came up with this, and it seems to be pretty accurate, you know, a defenseman really doesn't know everything or get to be to that next level until he plays somewhere around 250 games in the league. That seems to be the benchmark. Once you get that number under your belt, you've kind of seen a lot of situations, and you know, in different environments, road, home, you know, you get to know players in the league, you know, like the back of your hand, and things come to you easier, right, quicker. And you know, the good news for Miro is he's way ahead on most of all that.
But to answer your questions, he is 22. And number of games played, 237.
Okay, well, he's at that number then. He's in that zone where, you know, that, and like I said, it could be a month or two from now, it could be the start of next season, all of a sudden we're going to, holy shit, did he take another step?
Yeah.
You know, because he has taken a step year after year, and he's going to be worth the money. There's no doubt. But for Klinger, you know, if Klinger really wants to be here, the question that I would ask him, and he shouldn't have an answer for this, Klinger, if you were in this chair over here, would you pay you $9 million at 38 years old,
right?
Whatever that AAV works out to be. And, you know, and he's not supposed to say no, because this is his opportunity. This is his day. And I'm sure a large part of that is going, you know, for the last 5 years, I've been really good. And I've been underpaid, you know, making $4.5 million or whatever he's making. He should have been at 6 or 7. So unfortunately, that's not the way it works. You know, that you get, I think there's a lot of GMs that make the mistake of, you know, because there's players that they want, they know they're going to have 3 good years. If you're signing them to an 8-year deal and they're, you know, in their early 30s or their late 20s, and you know the only way to get them is to sign them to that 7 or 8 year deal. Well, the only way you're getting an 8-year deal is if you, you know, obviously if you, you know, you re-sign with your own team. Now you could be a free agent and sign with a new team, then the 8-year deal comes back into play. But I'm just saying that there's a lot of them that go, you know what? You have to decide. If you think that John Klingberg for 8 years at, let's just use a number of 8 million, is worth it in the next 3 years, and you're going to win a Stanley Cup.
Right.
That is, that to me, that's the way you have to look at it.
And the number Jeff Merrick quoted, and I think Jeff Merrick is an excellent source, 8 years, 63 million.
8 times 8 is 64. So my math is on. So yeah, yeah. It's somewhere around 8 million. But I don't know if Jeff knows everything, but he does. I mean, those guys are dialed in.
Yeah, he's dialed
in. So yeah. So, but again, but John, I think what part of what John is doing, and I completely understand it, saying, listen, I've been underpaid for 4 or 5 years here. And so, but yeah, but you signed that contract too. You agreed to that deal. You didn't have to agree to it the first time. So, yeah. You know, it's a tough, and I think he's a good kid. I think he's great in the market. You know, it's just that.
Well, he's looking at Seth Jones getting that paycheck. He's looking at others and he's saying, okay, you know.
Yeah. And there's a couple markets that he may, you know, and again, if you're going to leave, you know, you're not leaving to go play in Arizona. You're not going to go play in probably New Jersey. You know what I'm saying? You're going to go somewhere that's going to win a cup. And I think that there's been some teams out there that, you know, the names have been mentioned that they can work it money wise. You know, you want to go to Toronto? Yeah. You know, that team, Klinger can put up some numbers there,
yeah.
You know, with what Toronto has. And there's a couple other teams out there. But again, the other side of the coin is the same conversation I had with another player that, you know, I didn't mention a name, you know, a couple, 3 years ago, and now he's on his second team since he's left. There's no state tax here. Right. So, you know, if you want to get 8 million here, you know, and you want to go play in Canada, and, you know, with the exchange and the taxes and all that other stuff, you know, you got to look at it that way. But if you're doing it, do it for the right reasons.
Yeah.
If you want the money and you want the security, God bless you.
Right. And he has said, I have to say, I thought he did a really good job after the game.
Yep.
Talking about his situation, clarifying the report, and also talking about the desire to stay in Dallas, and talk about how the team has stopped communication as far as a new contract. I thought that press conference made him look very good and made him look like, I want to be here. I just want to get paid. And I give him kudos, because we forget, because, you know, John's an excellent speaker, that, you know, he's not from this country. And sometimes communication can fall through the cracks. And I just love how he was outspoken and the growth of him just as a person. I was really impressed.
Well, I think what stood out to me in as much as I paid attention to that, and I agree with you, he said, you know what, I'm going to tell you the truth. And I think he is a transparent guy, and you got to love that about him. And that you don't see that a lot in professional sports. There, you know, you hear a little bit, but there's other things behind the scene. I think he told you exactly how I felt. But the one thing that kind of stuck out to me is when his agent, I believe it was his agent, asked if they could, you know, speak with other GMs, like, And Dallas said, yeah.
Yeah.
So to me, if I was sitting, I know he wasn't sitting there at the time, but if I'd have been sitting there and heard that, yeah, you can go ahead and talk to some other GMs. Like, oh, these guys don't want me back.
Right. Exactly.
So I can understand where his frustration would come from. And I think, yeah, the money and they haven't heard any, I think they haven't had any communication since May or whatever it was. And that's one thing. And, you know, because remember how a few weeks ago I was talking about distractions, and I was talking about Fleury and what happened when he was in Vegas. And I talk about Dallas having four goaltenders. To me, I don't think this is a distraction because of the player so much, because he's going to come to work every day. He's going to have a smile on his face, but there is a distraction in his own mind, mm-hmm. in his own head. It's going to be there. And
yeah,
when
no,
I have
absolutely.
One of my
you're
top talk, players,
you're talking to your agent, you know, on a daily basis, and you know, the agent saying if, you know, there were any conversations with any other teams.
And let me tell you, you go home and you think about it. You
absolutely.
Know, you should be thinking about Florida and Tampa, and you're probably checking in. Hey, anything going on? You know what I mean? And so even if you don't want to, it's hard not to.
You're talking
so,
about it with,
again,
you know,
just,
your new wife, you know, you have a newborn. So, you know, he's got a lot on his mind.
Yep. But I hate having any kind of athletes with things in their head other than, you know, what you got to do that night.
Right.
And
yeah.
I think,
yeah.
And it always happens. That's part of the job though. You've got to learn how to deal with those kind of things, because it's all the way around, but you know, when you're talking about the next, you know, 6-7 years of your career, whatever you have left, this is your second or third year and you got a long time to go. This is his last kick at the can.
Yep.
So to speak, not from a playing standpoint, but, you know, to get the money that he thinks that he lost over the last 3, 4, 5 years, whatever he feels.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's a good transition to our Twitter mailbag. Craig, I'm back on Twitter. They unsuspended me.
I don't even know why. I don't even want to know why they are originally. And you're gonna blow smoke up somebody's ass why you did get banned or whatever.
But offensive hockey imagine. Tweets, apparently. I don't know. I tweet pictures of my dog and hockey. And I guess, I don't know, but I'm back.
You didn't sneak into the shower room after a game or something like that and tweet that picture, did you?
No. That was so weird. I could always see my Twitter feed. I just couldn't tweet anything in response. So it was a really unique situation. So thank you, Twitter, for bringing me back. Jeffrey Fink from What a Hockey. You know Finkster. He says, good to see this post again with Robo being a restricted free agent at the end of the season. What type of deal do you see Nil working out for him realistically? Do you see Pavs taking any type of discount to stay in Dallas beyond the season? And at Who Is Mr. John Galt said the same thing. Given the success of the first line and Pavelski's leaderships, do you think the Stars make a serious effort to re-sign him? If so, what do you think it is acceptable contract years and average? So I put those two together, Craig, because I think that does play into the Klingberg long-term thinking as well, because it's not like you have a ton of cap space. You know, Radulov comes off the books, but, you know, and Pavelski technically comes off the books. So you do have some money. It's just an interesting year for Jim Nill. I thought that Jim Nill did a great job with the Gurianov contract and with the Hintz contract in the offseason. I thought those guys were going to get a little bit more. So when it comes to Robertson, but the productivity that he's bringing up and restricted free agents more likely to hold out than ever before, I'm thinking 4 or 5 on kind of a bridge contract. What are you thinking?
I would try to go with a bridge contract. That's what I would try to do. But I just think there's so many factors that are going on here, because again, it's not like you're out of the playoffs, and it's not like you're dialed into finishing third in your division. And what do you do? And because are you going to pay Klingberg? Are you? And I don't think it's going to be about the money for Joe, to be honest with you. I think that he's probably kind of like the Malkin. I have enough money. I'm rich. You know, talking about an extension for Malkin over there in Pittsburgh. He says he's rich. He doesn't need more money. And I'm not saying that that's the way Pavelski thinks, but I think Joe's made good money his career, and he's deserved every penny of it. I do think that he doesn't want to go play with another team. I think that he is bought into Dallas, and so you may be able to work that out with Joe. But again, I have no clue on any of this, and I think that having a family and everything else, and you know, kids and getting situated here, I think all of that stuff plays into these guys, and I think Joe is a great family guy. And I think there's part of it that you don't want to take your kids and move them to another market for another year or two and put them in that different school. The other option is your wife and kids stay at home. You're not with them for a year or two. So Dallas, you know, we talk about the, you know, taxes and all that other kind of stuff. You know, maybe he would take it. And maybe for Joe to come back and be part of that line again, that would be worth the discount playing here. I don't know, but there's some things that I would be trying to throw at him and bring certain scenarios up, and it'd be his representative that will be bringing up the other things. So is Klingberg going to be back? There's some money. Can you say you're going to save money on Radulov? You possibly going to save some money on Klinger. You're going to save some money maybe on Joe. There may be a couple other people that are going out the door that you're not renewing their contract. So does that free up some money to go ahead and do a 5, 6, 7 year deal with Robo? I mean, do you only see anything different than him just getting better every year?
Yeah.
So do you want to pay him 4 for 2 or 3 years and then have to pay him 9 in 3 years from now? Or can you get him for 7.5 for, you know, 7 years? I don't know. I'm sure his agent is going, dude, we're better off doing this, because at the rate you're going, you know, just think about 3 years from now. You know, that you're going to, because again, I would assume if you can get a good bridge deal from a player agent standpoint, and you can get past this COVID shit, and the revenues start to go up, the salary cap's going to start to go up. These guys are going to make more money in 3 years from now. And if you sign a long-term one and they say, listen, you know, we thought our cap was going to go up $1 million this next year. And yes, we get some money coming off the books, but right now, pandemic wise and building wise and revenue wise for the league, it ain't going up. So do you want to bet on yourself and say, you'll take a 2 year, 3 year bridge deal?
Yeah.
And then when this stuff is all behind us, now you're going to be in, because Connor McDavid right now should be, I mean, Connor and these guys, they should be making more than the $12 million that they're making if you really want to look at it. But, you know, it is what it is. So,
right.
Once the revenues start kicking back in again, because these guys, I heard these, the players, because of revenue sharing, owe $1 billion. They owe $1 billion back to the league.
Wow.
Because of what was lost over this time period and whatever they owed before. Now, again, that's just a number I heard. I think, doesn't everything start with a B around here when you're talking money? No, it doesn't matter.
It does. And I also want to throw into the mix, Craig, that Jake Oettinger is a restricted free agent after this year.
Yeah. And see, that's what I mean is you've got, again, am I sitting there going, okay, if we fall off here in the next month and a half, and we're looking at, we're not making the playoffs.
You got to spin.
Well, am I in a situation now where this was our window, and our window is now a little bit closer, and mm-hmm. this guy's not going to be back. This guy's not going to be back. Is Holtby going to be back? Is Holtby going to be here? Like, would you trade Holtby in a month from now to a contender? Edmonton's going to pay money to somebody.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
No, I definitely would.
There's a lot of things I think that can still play out. That's why the gray area must be a nightmare for GMs at that time of the year. Are we in? Are we out? I want to send a message to our players that we believe in you guys. I want to give you something. I want to bring a player in, you know, like, would you take a chance right now on Evander Kane? Like, are you in a spot?
I would not.
Okay. And I would tend to totally agree with you.
But if I'm Choctaw Casino sponsoring, I would.
Well, no, but we know. I mean, he's had off ice problems, right? Yeah. I mean, it's been well documented. But to me, I would be so looking and knowing what my group is, what my leadership group is. I've been on teams that have unbelievable leadership groups. And if they came down and asked us, I'd say yes, because because we've done it with other players. Nah, not as bad, but we've done it. And he will not infect our group. We will call him out. We will kick him out, but he will not infect our group. And on the other side of the coin, if this guy really does have some financial problems, whatever, from gambling, why would he not want to be on his best behavior?
Right.
You can get him in here for $500,000-$600,000 for the next 3 months, knowing that he has to be on his best behavior because this dude owes money and he wants another NHL contract.
Yeah, it has to be the last stand.
So if you're ever going to get a player that ever has a reason, now he's had lots of reasons to be a good teammate and good, you know, employee, and it hasn't worked out that well. But if anybody's ever got a reason to get your shit together for 3 months and you're renting them for $600,000 or whatever that number, you know, you sign them to $1 million, what do you owe them for the rest of the year? $500,000-$700,000?
Right.
To get you over the hump, and you've got one line that scores for you?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I mean? You know
no,
what I, mean?
I know what you're saying. And don't think that the Gilardi family doesn't look at that playoff revenue. And if they miss this year, that's tough.
But I would have to say, and again, I'm just guessing here, but I'm sure a lot of teams have inquired. They say, nope, never going to happen. The D'Angelo guy, when he was in New York, never going to touch him again. All of a sudden, you know.
Yeah.
So there's always a team that thinks that you can fix a player.
Right.
There's
right.
always one out
there. No,
but again, I think there's some desperate teams too. I know that the front runner is Edmonton. And, you know, you put him in that group. I mean, the guy's he's a horse, right? He's a 30-goal scorer.
Yeah, great Those size, great shot, great speed.
Yeah, but is it worth, you know, does it put you over the hump? Does it to be from a good team to a contender? Does it put you into a position where it makes you or helps you get to a playoff team? And do we have but the most important thing is, how strong is our room? can our room handle that? And I don't know that answer.
Yeah.
But again, like I was going to say, I just think from the background that Jim Neal has and what that organization is that he has, that he runs now, the organization that he came from in Detroit, it is about the team. And so I don't see him really bringing in a player that's got the history that he does. I don't think he would do that. I don't think he'd take the chance on anything, because I think he's got a good group of guys. He got a good group of older guys. He's got a good group of kids, and he'd be worried about the future. I don't know, but that's just my guess.
Well, it's a big week ahead for your Dallas Stars, and we'll talk about it next week. Can't believe an hour's already gone by. Craig, as always, Norris-worthy performance on this podcast.
All right. That's as close as I ever would get right there.
Yep, absolutely. That's you the man, Craig. Thanks again, and we will talk to everybody next week here on Spits and Suds.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.